Let's go ahead and open our Bibles to the book of Acts, chapter 21, where we're going to pick up at verse 27. The situation is that Paul has arrived back at Jerusalem at the end of his third missionary journey. He gave a mission report to James, the half-brother of Jesus, and the Christ-designated apostle to the church at Jerusalem, and to the elders that are part of the leadership of that church. He was then informed that there is this crazy rumor that is going around that on his missionary journeys, he's been insisting that Jewish people have to quit being Jewish, that they have to become Gentile in order for salvation to be of any effect on them. Now, that is an absolute lie. It is completely the opposite of what he's been teaching the Jewish people. They can remain Jewish in all of their traditions and habits and community activities. What he's actually been teaching against was Judaizing, which was forcing Gentiles to become Jewish in order to be saved. So James and the leadership at Jerusalem are concerned that a lot of people are going to be upset with the news that Paul has arrived in the area because of this outlandish rumor. So they make the recommendation, prove that you are an observant Jew, which he is when he's around Jewish people. And the way that they ask him to prove it is, take four believing Jews, that is, Jews that believe that Jesus is Messiah, who have taken vows of the Nazarite, but now are finished with those vows, and you pay for them to go through the seven-day ceremony at the temple, the eighth day being the climactic day on which they present their offerings. All of that is listed, by the way, in Numbers chapter 6, how that's supposed to work. Now, the Apostle Paul seems to have taken Nazarite vows when he was on his missionary journeys. He cut his hair at Kenchrea at the beginning of his journey back here to Jerusalem. So more than likely, that was his signal. He was finishing his vow, and then he would go through the ceremonies at Jerusalem once he arrived, including the burning of the hair. But now he's been asked, join other people in this public demonstration that you are most certainly not telling Jewish people they have to give up their Jewishness to be saved. So he does go through the ceremony. And we are told in Acts 21, 27, when the 7 days were almost completed. So he's most of the way apparently through the ceremony with his four new buddies. The Jews from Asia, seeing him in the temple, stirred up the whole crowd and laid hands on him, crying out, men of Israel, help! This is the man who's teaching everyone everywhere against the people and the law in this place. Moreover, he's even brought Greeks into the temple and has defiled this holy place. Now that is another outrageous lie. It's based on, verse 29, the fact that they had previously seen Trophimus, the Ephesian, who is Gentile, with him inside the city of Jerusalem, and they supposed that Paul had brought him into the temple, not into the temple complex generically, because there were tons of Gentiles that could come into the court of the Gentiles, but the accusation was that he had brought him past the barrier wall. And as I explained last session, there was an automatic permission from the Roman government for capital punishment against any Gentile found beyond that barrier wall. In fact, there was a little placard everywhere along that wall saying anyone found, any Gentile found beyond this point is responsible for their own death. And so these guys have assumed that Paul has violated that, so they believe they have the right to execute Paul on the spot. Then all the city was stirred up. The people ran together. They seized Paul. They dragged him out of the temple. That's the inner temple, the court of Israel, and at once the gates were shut, and as they were seeking to kill him, so now they're dragging him through the north court of the Temple Mount, heading for the street access that will allow them to head north of the city just a little bit, to probably Golgotha, the place of the skull, which was the execution site. And there they were going to stone him to death. But word came to the tribune of the cohort that all Jerusalem was in confusion. Now, on the north side of the temple complex was the great big fortress or castle of the Antonia Tower. It actually had four individual towers surrounding it, and the southeast tower of the complex was so high that it had a vantage point of most of the Temple Mount. And there was always a watch placed there to keep an eye on the possibility of outbreak of disturbances. Because when you've got hundreds of thousands of people jammed into the Temple Mount, which was common, you don't want a riot to get started and get out of hand. And so, apparently on this day, the spotter sees the problem. He sends the word to the commander of the fortress, a man that's got the rank of tribune. He's over 1,000 men. And in this case, he's actually got an entire cohort, which is technically 6 centuries plus their reinforcements. So he's definitely got most of 1,000 people under his command already. And it was probably reinforced during the time of Pentecost, which this is very close to Pentecost time. So the word came to the tribune of the cohort that all Jerusalem was in confusion. He at once took soldiers and centurions, so at least most of 200 or more soldiers, because he's got at least 2 centurions with him. This is a quick reaction force, and they ran down to the temple complex. When they saw the tribune, that is the people that were carrying on the riot, when they saw the tribune and the soldiers, they stopped beating Paul, so they scatter. Then the tribune came up and arrested him, ordered him to be bound with 2 chains. He assumes that Paul is the troublemaker. He inquired who he was and what he'd done, and some in the crowd was shouting one thing, some another, and as he could not learn the facts from the uproar, he ordered him to be brought into the barracks. And when he came to the steps, he was actually carried by the soldiers because of the violence of the mob. Now, the way that the complex was situated, it seems to me as if there is a public street, a pretty broad public street, between the north wall of the Temple Mount and the south wall of the Antonia Fortress. But there is also, recorded in the descriptions of it, at least one, I think probably 2 bridges that went from the Antonia Fortress across that street to the upper deck of the north wall or north portico of the Temple Mount. And that seems to be the quick place to have access to the temple complex from the Antonia Fortress. So now they're going back up the access steps to the top deck of the north portico of the temple with the intention of going across one of those bridges through the secure checkpoint into the into the Antonia Fortress. So that's what they're trying to get to. And they are being mobbed as they're trying to take their prisoner out of the north courtyard of the temple. It says, for the mob of the people followed, crying out, "Away with him! They want him dead. They believe he has committed a capital crime." And they've lost their shyness now about confronting these maybe 150, 200 or more soldiers that have come into the temple north court. Now, as Paul was about to be brought into the barracks, it seems that he's probably up on the upper deck of the portico, still part of the temple complex, he said to the tribune, "May I say something to you?" And the tribune said back to him, Do you know Greek? Now, this needs to be explained more precisely. In the ancient first century world of the Roman Empire, if you did not speak Greek, at least conversationally, you were considered a barbarian because you didn't know the universal language. But how well did you speak that Greek? That is what's coming into here. Paul is a cultured, educated man. He speaks Greek fluently. He speaks it like a native Greek speaker. And that surprises this tribune because of an assumption he'd made. The tribune says back to him, "Are you not the Egyptian then who recently stirred up a revolt and led the 4,000 men of the assassins out into the wilderness?" So what has happened right around this time? It's the year 58. It's Passover time of 58. And just slightly before this time, I'm talking only months, maybe the year before, they've been having a new terroristic threat that's popped up amongst the Jewish people at Jerusalem. And this is called the Sicarii, the curved blade assassins. Their first victim was the high priest, whom they killed in a very public manner. And then they started a campaign of any Jewish person in high profile of the community that they thought was not towing the line for their very strict Jewish mindset. They would surround him in a public place, including in the temple courtyards, and immediately stab him covertly with these curved knives, and then they would fade back into the crowd yelling, "Oh no, murder, murder!" And they got away with this quite a few times. And so we've got a whole new terroristic group that is on the ascent right now. And they tend to be gravitating toward messianic figures. That is, men who claim that they are the fulfillment of prophecy. And one of the guys that came out of Egypt, he was Jewish, but he was a native Egyptian. So when he spoke Greek, apparently he spoke it with an Egyptian accent. This guy came out of Egypt recently, went to the Mount of Olives and told his followers, "I am going to cause the walls of Jerusalem to fall down and then we will all enter in." And the prefect of the province of Judea considered this to be a very threatening behavior for all these thousands of followers of this guy to be up on the Mount of Olives, threatening to sweep down against the Temple Mount. And so he sent his horse soldiers and foot soldiers against them, and of course they broke up and scattered. And the Egyptian guy got away, apparently with a whole bunch of his followers. And so there is an all-points bulletin out for him. This commander, this tribune, assumed that Paul was the guy back causing trouble again. But he's not. And Paul sets the record straight with the tribune. Paul replied, "I'm a Jew from Tarsus in Cilicia, a citizen of no obscure city." And that's true. Tarsus was an important city in the northeast corner of the Mediterranean basin. "I beg you, permit me to speak to the people." Now, all of that was in the Greek language. When the tribune had given him permission, Paul, standing on the steps, so these are the access steps going probably up to the upper deck of the north portico of the temple complex, heading toward the security bridge to the Fortress Antonia. He stands on the steps and he motioned with his hand to the people. And when there was a great hush, he addressed them in the Hebrew language. Now, I believe that Paul was very multilingual. I believe when he says he was a Hebrew of Hebrews, that that is an indication that he was fluent in the ancient biblical Hebrew language. I've already told you, I believe he is exceptionally fluent in the Greek language, speaks it like a native. The language of the people living in Judea, the language that they came, their ancestors came back from Babylonian captivity speaking, is Aramaic. It's related to Hebrew, but it is different enough to be distinct. And so he addresses them probably in the Aramaic language, which the bulk of locals, that is anyone living in the Holy Land area, they all speak that language. And so he says to them, chapter 22, brothers and fathers, hear the defense that I now make before you. And when they heard that he was addressing them in the Hebrew language, that is in the Aramaic tongue, they became even more quiet. So they are happy to listen to someone speaking their language. Now, some of them are from out of town. Some of them are from other countries. And their whatever their local language is, plus Greek, is probably the two languages they definitely speak. Some Jewish people living in other countries probably also speak some Aramaic. So that when they come to the Holy Land, they can kind of do that. So some of those out-of-towners might have had to listen even closer. But all of this is totally out of the understanding of the tribune. He and his soldiers, unless there's a few of them that have been long-term in the land and have learned some Aramaic, they're out of the loop. They can't hear this. So this is what he says to them. I am a Jew, born in Tarsus of Cilicia, but brought up in this city, educated at the feet of Gamaliel, according to the strict manner of the law of our fathers, being zealous for God, as you are this day. So he gives his testimony. That's his way of dealing with this riot. And so he tells them how he grew up somewhere else. I mean, he probably got up into his late teens, might have been right at 20, and that's when he was doing so well in his studies for rabbinical training that he was sent for advanced training at Jerusalem under one of the big names, Gamaliel. I believe that Paul probably arrived after Pentecost, or maybe right around Pentecost of 33, the same year that Jesus died and rose again. So he's trying to help them understand, I know what you guys are like because I was like you. I was zealous. In fact, verse 4, I persecuted this way to the death. The way was the Jewish name for the belief that Jesus is Messiah. It probably comes from Old Testament passages that talk about the way of righteousness, but also from the fact that Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except by me. So he says, I persecuted this way to death, binding and delivering to prison both men and women, as the high priest and the whole council of elders can bear me witness. So the new high priest, the current high priest, would have come up through the ranks. So Paul knows that whoever it is has certainly been back there at the time when he was acting as the agent for the Sanhedrin and for the priesthood to try to eradicate Christianity. From them, I received letters to the brothers, and I journeyed toward Damascus to take those also who were there and bring them in bonds to Jerusalem to be punished. And so in his story, he caused such havoc in the church at Jerusalem that they scattered, they split up. And once he realized that a big group of them had gone up to Damascus, he went to the high priest, to the Sanhedrin, and said, "Give me letters of introduction to the heads of the religious synagogues up in Damascus, and I'll go up there and I'll do the same thing I've been doing here. I'll go from synagogue to synagogue and go from house to house and investigate, and I will find everyone that believes this cult, and I will bring them back here for trial." So he volunteered to be the point man for this persecution of the church. Verse 6, "As I was on my way and drew near to Damascus, about noon, a great light from heaven shone around me, and I fell to the ground, and I heard a voice saying to me, 'Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me?' And I answered, 'Who are you, Lord?' Or, 'Who are you, sir?' And he said to me, 'I am Jesus of Nazareth, whom you are persecuting.'" So he's telling his personal story as to how he came face to face with the resurrected Jesus that he'd been trying to eradicate the disciples of. Verse number 9, "Now those who were with me, they saw the light, but they didn't understand the voice of the one who was speaking to me." In other places of the testimony of the Apostle Paul, it appears that Jesus was speaking in the Hebrew, ancient Hebrew language. And so the guys that were with him were not fluent in that like Paul was. And I said, "What shall I do, Lord?" And the Lord said to me, "Rise, go into Damascus, and there you will be told all that is appointed for you to do." And since I could not see because of the brightness of that light, I was led by the hand by those who were with me, and I came into Damascus. And one Ananias, a devout man according to the law. Notice he keeps stressing this idea that he himself was devoted to the law, and that this next man in the story is devoted to the law, because he's talking to people that are devoted to the law. They are Jewish. They love it. They love the traditions. And he wants to quell this rumor that he is anti-Jewishness. So one Ananias, a devout man according to the law, well spoken of by all the Jews who lived there, came to me and standing by me said, "Brother Saul, receive your sight." And at that very hour, I received my sight and I saw him. He looked right up into the eyes of the man that came to him at the Lord's command with a message for Saul. Verse 14, he said, "The God of our fathers appointed you to know his will, to see the righteous one and to hear a voice from his mouth." So God decided that Saul needed to meet Jesus personally. "For you will be a witness for him to everyone of what you've seen and heard. And now, why do you wait? Rise and be immersed and wash away your sins, calling on his name." And so Saul gives his testimony saying, I was called to repent and to embrace salvation in the name of he who is salvation, and to be immersed in his death and his resurrection, to rise up into a new life. And I did exactly that. And then verse 17, "When I returned to Jerusalem and I was praying in the temple, I fell into a trance." This is 3 years after his initial persecution and his conversion. After he'd been in Arabia with Jesus and then gone back to Damascus and had done a lot of work there, he gets run out of town in the middle of the night and he comes to Jerusalem for a couple of weeks. And it says, "While I was there, I fell into this trance and I saw him, that is Jesus, saying to me, make haste and get out of Jerusalem quickly, because they will not accept your testimony about me. And so I said, Lord, they themselves know that in one synagogue after another, I imprisoned and beat those who believed in you. So that's his bona fides about how zealous he was for the law. He was willing to do to others what these guys are now trying to do to him. So he wants them to understand where he's coming from. He keeps saying, and when the blood of Stephen, your witness, was being shed, I myself was standing by and approving and watching over the garments of those who killed him. So he goes all the way back to where he first was used by the Sanhedrin to help out the witnesses who were the first ones to throw stones against Stephen, the first martyr of the church, in the first year of the church. And then he does something that triggers the crowd. He says what Jesus told him at that time, 3 years into Saul's story as a believer. Jesus said to me, go, for I will send you far away to the goyim, to the Gentiles. And up to this word, they listened to him, and then they decided they wanted him dead once again.